Lisa Davis, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. When today's guest, Suzanne Colon, was laid off from her dream job at a magazine during the economic downturn of 2008, she needed to cut her budget way, way back, and that meant home cooking. Well, her mother suggested, why don't you look in Nana's recipe folder? So in the basement, Suzanne found the tattered treasure full of handwritten and meticulously typed recipes peppered with her grandmother Matilda's commentary in the margins. Reading it, Suzanne realized that she had found something more than a collection of recipes. She had found the key to her family's survival through hard times. Suzanne began recreating Matilda's sturdy food recipes for baked pork chops and beef stew, and Aunt Nettie's clam chowder made with clams dug up by Suzanne's grandfather, Charlie, in Long Island Sound. Suzanne has written cover stories, personal essays, and food features for O, the Oprah magazine, Marie Claire, Jane, Details, Harper's Bazaar, 17, The Advocate, Mademoiselle, Rolling Stone, and other magazines. Suzanne, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
It's a pleasure reading your book. I really, really enjoyed it. And in the preface to your wonderful book, Cherries in Winter, your mother tells you, quote, you have to put up soup. And if you can share what that means to you and your family.
Absolutely. Putting up soup is an expression that has both a literal and figurative meaning. Putting up soup basically means getting out this big, heavy soup pot. It's like this black cast iron pot that's been in my family for generations, and making this big pot of soup with whatever you have on hand. And generally, you know, like, the figurative meaning of that is it's sort of battening down the hatches. It's when there's a troubled time coming up ahead and you're making this big pot of soup that's going to tide you through several meals. So it's kind of a catchphrase in my family for, all right, well, you know, things are going to happen, so let's just, you know, get sturdy here. Let's, you know, let's be strong through it. And then you make this big pot of soup.
Uh-huh. Over. And, you know, oh, that's good. And, you know, you write about this. The uncertainty is something that you and your family are familiar with. And I love how you describe it. You write about how it's like a neighborhood you haven't been in for a while, quote, but I know my way around this neighborhood because I grew up there, as in my parents, my grandparents, and family members even further out than that. And I love how you tie the stories of the past to your own stories. And I also love how you describe, you're so descriptive. And when you find your grandmother Matilda's recipe folder and the tattered edges, like, I could feel it in my hand. And if you can kind of describe to us what it was like for you when you found it and were looking at it.
Well, it's interesting because this time that we're going through right now, this recession, has just been a big slap in the face for everybody.
Oh, yes.
We've had such prosperous times for so long. It's really quite, it's a shock to the nation's system. In my family, I mean, and in everybody's family, because this book really is about everybody's family, not just my own. I mean, everybody's got grandparents or great-grandparents who went through both world wars, the Great Depression. So, you know, these difficulties, there's a lot of resilience in memory. If you go back a few generations, you find out that, you know, people's families escaped from the Holocaust or other national wars in different nations. I mean, it's really incredible if you dig a little bit. And so that's what I was doing when I went in the basement and I looked for my grandmother's folder of recipes at my mother's suggestion. She said, you know, Nana probably had a bunch of recipes from around World War II when we were living on the farm in upstate New York, and I bet you could find some very inexpensive, hearty recipes in there. And that was exactly what I found. But also, each recipe told a story of, yes, this was the first winter on the farm in Saratoga when they were freezing, and the snow was up past the door, mm-hmm. and, you know, they wouldn't see a soul for days, and they couldn't get the farm running, and, you know, they still managed to make it through. I mean, it's not like they were completely starving, but they certainly weren't, you know, I mean, I have a very cushy life even as a laid off person compared to my grandparents were going through, you know. And my grandmother, when she was 16 years old, she had just been taken out of school and put to work as a secretary in the Mays Company. And a few months later, the stock market crashed. Oh. And she was the only member of the family at the age of 16 who was able to hold a job. She was the support of the family. Imagine. I mean, I thought...
I can't imagine. That's, being a teenager.
To be a teenager in that position, just freaking out every day, oh my God, am I going to be able to hold my job so I can feed my family? And they were barely eating as it was because there were so many of them. and she was getting by on a corn muffin split in half, half for breakfast, half for lunch, and a can of soup for dinner, and that was per day.
Oh, my gosh. And the other thing, too, that you mentioned about your Nana Matilda is that she was in love with words and that inspired by her teacher, Miss Bumstead. And I know she liked writing, obviously, and to have to go to work and work for the family. And it has a lot to do with people now, you know, whether you can follow your dreams or you just have to get by. You know, that just brings up a lot of questions.
Well, you know what's interesting is that I recently went to a conference of the Romance Writers of America in Orlando, and I met a great many people, not just women, but men as well, who, you know, they have families, and some of the family members are soldiers who are stationed in Iraq and Afghanistan, and a lot of these people were teachers or librarians or doing some sort of job that paid the bills. But they would get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to write. This is what my Nana did. I mean, she loved writing. She had to work as a secretary, as an executive assistant, all of these things to, you know, help pay the rent and the bills and get food and things like that. You know, what everybody has to do today. But she, in her, you know, she found time. She didn't really have much spare time, but she would stay up late. She would get up early, and she would write these essays about her life, about what it was like when she found a lump in her breast and had to go to the hospital and get a biopsy because, you know, things were different back then. There was no early detection. You had to have surgery if you found a lump. Mm-hmm. And all of these, you know, the pieces of her life, you know, what it was like to try to get a promotion at work, you know, her views on proper makeup and attire to wear to work. Writing magazine essays, and this was, I asked my mother about it, and she said this was how she kept sane. This was her great joy in life, was writing.
Yeah, you know, it's funny too, speaking of writing and makeup and stuff, you write that you found a book that your Nana had called 1003 Helpful Hints and Work Savers to Help You Beat the High Cost of Living. It was published in 1947, and one of your favorites, and it cracked me up too, is, quote, "For longer girdle life, fasten garter straight and in the center of the stockings." So now you went and wrote some of your own. So Suzanne, if you can share some with us, because again, a lot of people right now could use that advice.
Oh yeah, well, you know, I mean, we did all of the ones that have become pretty run-of-the-mill these days, which was we dumped a lot of the cable channels.
Yes.
That we were watching a little bit too much TV. My husband, Nathan, loves to relax by watching television, and I had to say to him, do we really need all these premium channels? And he grudgingly said, no, we do not. And then he asked me a bigger question, which was, do we really need the truck? And that was our vehicle. That was our only car. And I had to say, no, we do not. And so we sold our truck. And that cut down on, you know, everything, insurance, parking, gas, all that kind of stuff. And then my neighbors had this dog who was, you know, just very cute, uncontrollable bull terrier. And, you know, they just needing a dog walker. And I was like, really, how much does that pay?
I did that for a while. When I had gotten laid off from a nonprofit, because they, you know, the health educators are usually the first to go, and you know, so much for prevention, right? Anyway, so I did the dog walking for a while, and I really enjoyed it, and it's such a, I think that's a great way to make some extra cash.
It is fantastic, and in fact, just anecdotally, I heard a story about a woman who used to work on Wall Street. You know, that life is just nonstop, very, very early in the morning till late at night, frenetic pace, and she was laid off, and she started walking dogs for neighbors. You know, I'm home, I have something to do, you know.
Yes.
She was just bouncing off the walls. It turned into a business for her.
Yep.
And she loves it.
Oh,
she
that's
absolutely
great.
Loves it.
That's,
you know, she's
great.
Outside with these dogs. She loves it.
Well, I have a terrier mix, so I understand the challenges of walking a terrier. He walks me, basically. Oh, my gosh. Unbelievable, isn't it?
I mean, it's like a sled dog. Just put me on some rollerblades or a skateboard and just pull me.
Exactly. No, but that's a smart thing. That's really good. I think another good thing is like maybe consigning clothes or something, if you have extra clothes to, you know, spare.
Yes, absolutely. What I find wonderful is that, and this is a valid statistic, entrepreneurship is up, I think, somewhere around 400%. And that speaks to two things. One, people are getting smart about how to survive this recession, which they say the recession is officially over, but the effects are going to be ongoing for a while. The other thing it speaks to is just that resiliency that I found in my Nana's writings and her recipes and talking to my mother and listening to my family stories. When things got bad, there was no time for complaint. My grandparents did not sit around and go, oh my God, what are we going to do? I feel so unfulfilled. No. Basically, the discussion was, what are we going to do?
Yes.
You know, and they got to it. And that's what Americans are doing today that is just so wonderful to hear. If you can't open up a restaurant, that was your dream, you get a food truck. Food trucks are all over the place now, and they're wonderful. I think that's just so ingenious. People, there are so many dog walking businesses where I live because this is a dog town, and Jersey City is a dog-filled town, and people are walking dogs, and they are enjoying it because they love animals and they like being outside.
Oh, that's right.
And, you know, there's at my local farmer's market, there's the mortgage apple cake lady, this wonderful woman who baked like 100 apple cakes to sell for $10 a piece to save her home from mortgage foreclosure.
Oh, wow.
Now she helps other people, 5% of her profits go to help other people from losing their homes to foreclosure. So people are just, I mean, it's a beautiful thing to see. It's sad that it was forced into necessity by this recession, but the resilience that people are showing is so inspiring and so beautiful to me, and it's what our grandparents did.
Yeah, I really admire it too. And I mean, I love, like last night I made a huge pot of chili. I mean, I'm going to be eating it all week, you know, and
yep.
I love that, and especially with the winter coming and the fall. And speaking of the winter, you know, with the holidays coming up, you have some great recipes. I love beef stew. So
oh,
you have
goodness.
The beef stew with yeast dumplings and a chicken pie a la Mississippi, and they're very rich and hearty, and I could just see people eating them by a fire. It's just brings up that image, you know, in a cabin or something.
Oh, totally. No, cherries in winter is very, the recipes are classic American comfort food. And also, they're very good for the fall and winter, you know, which is when I started writing it. I started writing it as things were getting cold, and I thought, oh, my goodness, what am I going to do? And soup was, of course, the first thing. And, you know, one of the joke recipes in the book is, you know, my attempted split pea soup, which turned out not bad, but it was the beginning of me learning how to cook. These days, I'm a lot better prepared for the winter, thanks to my Nana's recipes. My husband no longer fears coming home at night and asking the dreaded question, what's for dinner? Now he's very excited. It's like, oh, what's happening in there?
That's I know. You have all these great, and what cracked me up, what was the spaghetti? Suzanne's rigatoni disoccupate, pasta of the unemployed, half pound pasta, one small jar of prepared spaghetti sauce.
That was the first recipe, and I was very dismayed to find out that a reader thought that was a serious recipe. Admonishing me for it. She was sort of like, you know, this does not count as a recipe. And I was like, no, I'm really sorry. Sometimes my sense of humor is a little dry, and it didn't come across as the joke that it was meant to be.
Oh, I thought it was funny as heck.
The other recipes are much more straightforward and actually usable and very good. And I must point out, now that the holidays are coming and we are headed towards now this will be our second or third kind of lean winter as far as holiday presents go. There's a butter cookie recipe in cherries in winter.
Oh my God, I was just looking at that one. I have it open right here, page 105.
That is page 105. I'm telling you, that is the go-to for most people because they will tell me that these butter cookies, you know, they're very inexpensive to make, extremely inexpensive. They make a lot of cookies. And you get them in a nice little tin with some tissue paper. You give them to people as a holiday gift when you go tree trimming, when, you know, housewarming.
That's
you know,
nice.
It's a small neighbor gift. And you don't have to spend money. The house smells amazing when these are in the oven. And it's just a good go-to for me. I mean, I can't tell you how many people have received butter cookies as gifts in a nice tin. And also, I think it's better than a store-bought gift because people know that you spent time and care. They really appreciate the effort.
Oh, I agree.
It doesn't take much to present, you know, so that people have told me, readers have been kind enough to tell me, okay, did the butter cookies, made a couple dozen, gift, thank you.
Well, you know what else I love about the book, too, is you have the copy of the recipe that was your grandmother's, like photocopied, and it's beautiful, you know, and you get to see and tell that it's tattered and everything. And it's just, it's really, really lovely. And I'm looking forward to the holidays. I'm going to make some of this. The mashed potatoes are always good for the holidays.
Oh, my goodness. The variations on the mashed potatoes, I tell you. My mother actually said to me, I don't know how we even survived the mashed potatoes, considering the amount of butter your grandfather used to put in them. And I was like, well, you know, he's Irish. I mean, and also, this is a man who, during the World War, when he was stationed over in France and became separated, he and a group of men became separated from their company. And they found themselves in a French farmhouse, you know, hiding from the enemy, and then digging up potatoes out of the dirt a la Scarlett O'Hara and eating them raw.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So he deserved any amount of butter that he wanted. In those
Forget a pat of butter. Just give him a whole butter, you know, whatever it's called, stick.
Believe me, there were sticks involved.
Oh, I love butter. I might be health conscious, but don't take away my butter. I do like the butter, and I love mashed potatoes. Oh, and I love gravy and all that good stuff. So I'm looking forward.
You know what? For the holidays, it's a splurge. It's indulgent. We all need it. It's comforting. It's when it becomes like a regular thing.
Yeah,
you have to sort of pause and say, okay, where's my pressure right now? But you know, Thanksgiving and the December holidays, who cares? I live a little.
I completely agree. Now, you mentioned your grandfather, Charlie. Now, you had a special relationship with him.
Very.
That's nice. And didn't your grandmother have a, I'm trying to remember now, did she have a special relationship with? No.
Yes.
With
her? We both had the same situation where her father was not present for her childhood, and so her grandfather became
father.
Was with me. And so we were both very, very close with these very, you know, to the outside world, these were very rough working men, you know, very tough, very big barrel-chested, you know. My great-great-grandfather was a stonemason, and my grandfather was, you know, this construction worker and a farmer and all. But with us, they were like the gentle bear.
Oh, that's so nice.
Reading the bedtime stories, utterly nurturing, and, you know, in very uncertain worlds that my Nana and I both shared as children, they were extremely protective. It was like you knew nothing bad would happen to you with these giants around, you know, these very protective men. So our grandfathers were just very, very dear to us and, you know, gave us good ideas of what men ought to be.
Oh, that's terrific. Well, I tell you, speaking of terrific, Suzanne, your book, Cherries in Winter, My Family's Recipe for Hope in Hard Times, is fantastic, and I really encourage people to check it out and get your heart warmed and your tummy at the same time, you know, by making these recipes. And how can people learn more about you and your terrific work?
Well, if you go to suzannecolon.net, and it's SuzannColon.net, you will find my blog and ordering information for the book. And on the blog, there are plenty of recipes. I also encourage visitors to send me their family recipes because I love that kind of community. They get inspired by my book and they dig up their family's recipes. And oh, I have a recipe for such and such. I'm having this dumplings recipe soon that this reader sent in to me. You know, I love that sort of thing. So just by going to suzannecolon.net or looking up Cherries in Winter, just Google it and you'll find my website, my blog, and all of that.
Oh, well, terrific. Well, I want to thank you again. And if people want to learn more about It's Your Health, they can go to www.itsyourhealthnetwork.com. You can watch It's Your Health TV for free. You can, you know, forget about cable. You can listen to audio archives of It's Your Health. You can listen to me on KKZZ in Ventura County, California with Positive Parenting with Freeman Michaels. I hope everyone has a great week. Take care. Bye-bye.